Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Super Tuesday. You think it's a Super Tuesday because it's political? No, it's super because it's Tuesday, and if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesday with Stan Deo, our very special guest. Before I get back to Stan, I want to mention, folks, saddle for battle, because I do have a feeling. Now, Eric, did I coin that phrase? Thank you. I coined that phrase, saddle for battle. I own that phrase, or at least I claim to own it. No. Anyway, I made that up. Saddle for battle. It was just, but I think that's appropriate, because I think we need to saddle for battle for what's coming. And as Stan was coming on, we were talking briefly about the state of affairs and, you know, about the war on cash and about the economy and about the dismal things. And oh yes. And I want to mention, before getting to Stan, I want to mention too an email I received. God bless you. Nancy D. She writes, you know, how about living in a nursing home that has not made any preparations at all and don't intend to? You know, when we were talking earlier about the elderly and the infirmed being alone and listening to news and being, you know, but she writes, you know, I know God's going to take good care of me. And even if it's at a FEMA camp or a place of not her choosing, or a, you know, God uses people in miraculous and important ways. I mean, look at Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and look at others, both in the recent past and the long term past. So, Nancy D, thank you so much for your email. Know that our prayers are with you and with everyone who feels alone or are alone, and know that you're in our prayers. But one of my favorite people, Stan Deo from standeo.com, he and his wife, Holly Deo, great people. Holly Deo, author of Dare to Prepare. What a great book. Stan Deo, Cosmic Conspiracy, and others. His lecture series on the Garden of Eden. Oh, fantastic. And folks, bookmark standeo.com and go to the show images. Stan, it's just you and me tonight. Let's kick back. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the program.
Sounds like a plan to me. Fireside chat, as it were. It's a little bit chilly here. I suppose it's chilly there.
Yep, we have a fire going.
You know, your last segment there, you were talking about the war on the $100 bill. This is certainly circulating around the metal dealers that I've talked to in the last couple of hours. I guess it's been about 6 hours ago, but I did find out that they are worried that the $100 bill is going to be removed from circulation. No one seems to know what the administration is going to do if they do it. Like, do you have to turn your $100 bills in and get, you know, 20s, or, you know, is there going to be a penalty on it if you don't do it by a certain date or something? I don't know. But, you know, for people, you know, those of us that are prepped, and we've advised a lot of people about that, you know, you were supposed to take your assets, put some in cash, some in gold, some in silver, some in lead, some in food, you know, divide up things, right? And I got to thinking about that while I was talking to one of these metal dealers today, one of them, the leading ones, actually, that you know the name. But the guy said, you know, right now, people that had gold in bars and gold and large collector coins, you know, like St. Gaudens and stuff that were like, you know, several thousand dollars a coin and stuff like that. So they've been, for the last few weeks, they've been converting those to smaller coins, like tenth of an ounce and a quarter of an ounce, you know, British sovereigns or, you know, Swiss francs and things like that. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, it's because they wanted a barterable form so they could buy smaller objects with it rather than having a $2,000 coin or something, and you try to, you know, get a loaf of bread with that. It's pretty expensive bread. And so apparently there's now the premium, what they call a premium, on the gold coins that are small is high, like, you know, 30-35%, something like that, over the value of the gold. Now, so the guy and I got to talking, and definitely he knew about prepping and preppers and stuff, because preppers are buying a lot of gold and selling a lot of gold and silver. And I said, well, okay, what do we do with the, you know, the $100 bills and stuff? Do we just go turn those in and get some new stuff, or you know, abandon our bank accounts? He says, I don't know. He said, if they outlaw cash, which is where they're going, they're saying they're trying to get rid of criminals and drug traffic and stuff like that. we're going to have to go to gold and silver, but the powers that be know that we are. And so how are they going to block traffic, you know, black market traffic or whatever in metals? He says, who knows what law they can write? I mean, the administration can make any law they want at the rate they're going and say that, you know, you can possess gold and silver, but you can't trade in it. If you're trading, they might make a law that says, you know, $5,000 fine and, you know, 6 months in jail if you're caught trading in, you know, silver metals or gold metals, coins or bars or whatever. So what do? So you've got cash that's going to disappear, bank accounts that are going to be, you know, either shut down or revalued to lower amounts. You've got some people got gold bars, gold coins. Well, okay, if you can't trade them, they're useless. And silver, you can't trade the coins and the bars, useless. So you get down to the bottom line again, which is you don't want all those mediums of exchange. You want the things they would buy. You know, like food, water, shelter, medicine, you know, that kind of stuff, rent. And so it's a time where people ought to be, you know, looking at prepaying what service utilities they can, you know, gas and electricity and water, and then maybe prepaying rent or mortgage of a month or two ahead of time. Gives you that much time to cushion, to readjust to what's coming. And I suspect this year we're going to see some really big changes in the world economy, Doug. I mean, I just, this guy and I, it was a depressing talk when I, you know, was talking to him, because it's like the Bible says, and the rich shall throw their gold and silver into the street as cankered and rotten, you know, useless. And so it will be. You know, if they pass this legislation, you won't be able to trade these things. It's not like it wasn't done back in, you know, the early 70s. I mean, it's been done before, you know, in 1935 or whatever. So I'm just, I guess Holly's book, the Dare to Prepare book, and books that, you know, suggest what you should buy in as supplies is the real way to save what resources you've got. And even that's going to be a burden, because you can't buy enough for, you know, like a year or something like that and put it on your back and you know, march off somewhere. You got to have a way to get it there.
Right.
So it's just, boy, I tell you what, it's tying my mind in a knot this evening.
Yeah, mine too, and especially when the old argument was doing away with the you know, almost worthless copper colored penny. Okay, I mean, remember when we were talking about doing, you know, getting rid of that? Now we're talking now we're going on the other end of the ladder and talking about doing away with $100 bill, and there are claims, and I don't know. I doubt these claims, where supposedly the $100 bills, they play a little role in the functioning of the legitimate economy, yet a crucial role in the underground economy. Do you believe that, or do you think that's just a handy excuse?
That the $100 bills are being used like with criminal enterprises and drugs and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, Peter Sands from the Kentucky School of Government is quoted in the LA Times as saying, you know, high-value notes, and that would mean $100 bills at this point, play, and I'm quoting now, play little role in the functioning of the legitimate economy, yet they play a crucial role in the underground economy, saying that we don't need $100 bills, you know. Well, that's a very convenient excuse by a Keynesian economist, I believe. So.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess if you look at it and go out into the marketplace, you know, the restaurants and, you know, grocery stores and stuff, and you pull out a $100 bill, I mean, how many people do that these days?
That's true.
Who has change for it, you know? I mean, everything is plastic, and, I mean, we try to take cash with us when we go to a restaurant nowadays, because of the likelihood of our, you know, credit card information being stolen somewhere between our table and the back room there, you know, by the staff in a restaurant.
Sure.
It's happened before, actually, to us, and so we've gotten wiser. Even though we're part of that life lock, it can't cover everything, and so we've we make that decision. But, you know, if you go to do something like that, you don't want to go with a $100 bill these days, because it singles you out. You're unusual for carrying that kind of stuff around.
Yeah, and I especially have a problem with banks, and of course the financial rules where against structuring, where sometimes you don't even know you're structuring, taking out so much money to supposedly undercut the $10,000 rule. I don't know. Everything just seems really backwards. And you're right about the credit cards. I have a friend who went to a local restaurant. It was a chain. It's a chain restaurant, you know, national chain, but it was local, and ended up giving the card to the waitress. And it was later that night that he got a call from a hotel. I think it was a hotel. It's saying, did you just make reservations? You know, I mean, it was out of the ordinary. It was in the Caribbean or something. And here, come to find out, the police did trace it to somebody within the restaurant. What do you call it? Skimming off the credit card number. So it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and that's why I don't believe in cell phones or ATM cards. I don't like using either one.
Well, we don't have any smartphones in our house. We've got the old flip phones from years back, and we only turn those on when one of us is going to be out of the house, or both of us are going to be separated somewhere or another, and we need to be able to communicate in case of emergency. Other than that, we have landlines, well, a landline, and all this use of these smartphones is just putting too much information and control in the hands of the powers that be. It's out of control.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't need that. And I go back to the 1990s or whenever that was, too. We had those, we had analog phones, cell phones, I guess. Analog. Is that the right word? Anyway, and when they switched
to digital. Yeah, they weren't digital, they were analog, yeah.
Right, and we had better clarity and all of that. But when they switched to digital, it seemed to me that the entire reason for them doing that was to be able to store much more information than the old analog. But anyway,
that's me. That's true, that's true. I mean, that, arguments could be made for that, but, Lord... It's such an overpowering, overwhelming control of our lives that they're doing now. Just unbelievable.
Very much, yeah. Yeah, it seems to be accelerating at a tremendous rate, whether it be the economy. How long? I mean, we keep hearing about this crash. I mean, many of the major websites, the popular financial websites. Oh, it's going to crash any time. It can't go on. And I was asked a question today when I was on USA Prepares on the radio show. When do you think it's going to happen? Man, I don't know. But I think we're already in this crash. We're in this dive, right? I mean,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
something's going to tip it over. I mean, like it's already flimsy. Dying, gasping for breath, as it were, this economy. But if you throw in, a nuclear exchange in the Middle East, that could really put the cat amongst the pigeons in the world economy. Everybody will just pull in their horn. Look, that Baltic Dry Index about shipping, going to and fro between the countries, I looked at it a week or so back, and the day I looked at it, there was not a merchant ship in either the Pacific or the Atlantic Ocean. They were all hugging the coast and going up down the coast, but not going country to country. And that tells you something is wrong.
Yeah, you were the first one on our program. You were the first one who said, I looked at the map with the ships out at sea and nothing out at sea. And the first one to bring that up. And then all of a sudden we began hearing about the Baltic Dry Index, and our resident BDI expert, Larry M. from Santa Clarita, California, said it's now at 332. Interesting number. My number is 322 for obvious reasons. But so what does that signify? And I know it's an indice of multiple indexes, or multiple numbers, but is it just,
basically what that index does? Oh, and by the way, let me say that when I brought that to your attention on the show here a few weeks back, it was because one of your listeners told me about it, said, you better check this out. There's something wrong here. So I just investigated what one of your listeners gave to me. So I can't remember his name at the moment. In fact, two of them did, a woman and a guy, different emails. So it's this exchange of information or questions back and forth that helps us all get the information out. Anyway, the index basically tells you the health of the world trading economy in commodities. You know, who's selling and buying stuff, and how much shipping is, you know, going on between countries. And that index basically is just a health indicator of the global economy. Better than the New York Stock Exchange, New York Dow Jones Index. Although that index is pretty much going to tell you a similar thing pretty quick, but when you look out there in the ocean and you don't see merchant ships going back and forth from China or from, you know, Europe back and forth to us, Germany, whatever, it tells you that we aren't trading, we aren't buying, or we aren't selling.
That's right.
And so that's why the Baltic Dry Index is very important.
Eric the tech just asked if you remember what the shipping map that you had brought our attention to several weeks back. You remember what website that was from?
Let's see. Let me just think a minute here. I'll just check my history file and see while we're talking here, because I think I put a link to that somewhere in my yes. I think it's a Vessel Finder link. Checking, standby.
Okay.
Okay. Tell him to look up vesselfinder.com. That's one of the links I used, vesselfinder.com.
All right.
And that will give you a number of options. I'm just trying to see here how we do this. I'm looking right now live to see the port index here. Live ship tracking, cargo ship tracking. We're going to cargo ships now. Okay, I don't want those by ship. Anyway, go to Vessel Finder. That's the first one. And when you get there, there'll be a big map come up with little arrows and dots showing where everybody is. And at the moment, I see not a lot of ships in the Pacific at all. Wow, that's...
All right.
There's some in coming out of the Mediterranean, out through the Gibraltar region, headed toward New York, it looks like. But, well, half of them are going back. They went out into the Canary Islands area or somewhere and turned around and went back. But anyway, you can go in there and you click on those things to tell the ship name, what the tonnage is, what the draft, and, you know, who owns it and that kind of stuff. But even now, as we're on the air here, there's just not a lot of, excuse me, of ships in between countries. They're hugging the coast. And I can only think that it's because their owners are knowing that situations worldwide are such that they don't want their ships out at sea when stuff hits the fan. Look, I'm telling you, I'm holding my breath over that Middle East situation. It is so pregnant with disaster, it's going to happen any tick of the clock. And it won't wait for Monday morning type stuff. It'll just happen when it happens.
You know, that really, the entire situation in the Middle East is of grave concern to me. And the more I study this, Stan, the more I really see, at least in my view, how this was orchestrated from really day one. I mean, you go back right after 9/11 to Iraq. Well, you can't even go back to the first Desert Storm or the first Desert War, and forward from there. And you look at Arab Spring. It was really not about democracy bringing the democracy. It was about taking down leaders and reformatting the power structure of the Middle East. That's how it was to me. And I look at it, where are we at now? I mean, what have we done? Really, what have we done? And I'm saying, what have we done? My goodness, you know, at this point, what have we done? And I believe you're right. I do.
Okay, tell Eric another thing, another site here, too. I just found it. I found my notes. Is marinetraffic.com.
Oh, that's right. That was the one, I think. Marine Traffic. Yes.
Yeah. Now, that one shows a lot more detail of the traffic we're talking about. And it looks as though most of them are hugging the coast. I don't see a lot of them in transit. Between Europe and us from North Africa, there are some about halfway out into the ocean there. But that's the one that you want. That's the good one, marinetraffic.com. It lets you break it up by tankers and cargo vessels and passenger vessels and things like that, which really gives you a better idea about what's going on.
All right. Fantastic. All right, if I can slip a little news in here, we do have on our internal monitors going. Apparently we're waiting for the world is waiting for some sort of press conference from Donald Trump at campaign headquarters. Vermont's the winner, Sanders is the winner in Vermont on the Democratic side. Trump in Alabama, this being Super Tuesday, Clinton in Alabama over Sanders. So it looks like a Trump versus Clinton situation forming up. Not that that should surprise anyone. Stan, I just thought I should throw that out there.
They're saying that he's projected to win Alabama, Georgia, Massachusetts, Tennessee, but at the moment that's the hot news story. So, you got to wonder if Romney is going to come in, to support the... Say again? Oh, is it too late? He can't come in? I'm just getting an update here. Vermont, he's got as well. Okay, well, I don't know what the filing date limit is for running for president, but Romney apparently had said something about if needed, he would come in to help the Republican Party if Trump was the only option. So, who knows?
Stan, let me ask this question. Do you think... I guess I'll just ask this question, and then you can reformat it the way you see fit. Do you think Trump is going to be... is Trump going to be the Republican nominee for president?
Boy, with all the opposition he's getting, they don't seem like they want to support him. And if they don't, of course, he said he wouldn't run a third-party ticket himself. But, I don't know. It's a crapshoot as far as I can see. I really don't know what he's going to do.
Right. The other thing is
he is so out there and making, so many people mad, somebody may, hurt him, take him out of the race physically.
Oh, man, yeah.
Or we may not have an election at all if the world situation goes to war state. The situation in the Middle East does. You see what I'm saying?
Well, in a way, that almost kind of makes sense. It would certainly, to me, it would make the Republicans happy in a sense because, Trump wouldn't get in, and then the Democrats would. I don't know. How crazy would that be, though?
Have you been getting any emails about this carbon monoxide cloud over California?
Yes. Yes.
What do you think about it?
I don't know. We had a whole bunch of emails asking us to ask you about this and about the carbon monoxide situation. What's going on with that?
Let me tell you. Do not worry. It is bad data from the satellite that monitors all this stuff and the program that averages the gas concentrations. I went in and looked back probably a month, day by day, and every 3 hours at the tracing of the gases worldwide. And I put it up on the show images page. If you go there, show images, and second row right hand side, it says see animated difference, click here. Okay, doesn't tell you what, but if you click on that picture, it'll take you over to snaps I made of the null site that's showing the plot of the carbon monoxide, the carbon dioxide, and the sulfur dioxide gases. And you'll see there that I've I've got one picture showing the big thing they were worried about, this dark black and purple cloud that just appeared over California. And I tracked it down to this. On the 25th of February this year, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that would be my time in, in California time, it would be about 6 in the morning to 9. 6 in the morning, make the first report, and, you know, there was nothing there. It was just average little clouds of very, very minimal concentration. But 3 hours later, suddenly there's 1,000% increase in this carbon monoxide over the entire state of California, or darn near all of it, and within the next day it was all over it and spreading. Well, okay, in 3 hours you do not see a carbon monoxide release like that spreading everywhere, especially when the wind directions are taking it offshore if it were there. You know, and those show on those maps. And if you look at the type I put under there, under the picture, click on the type instead, and you will see an animated GIF I put up there, which shows you that same spot there, California, on the 25th of February, but 3 hours separated before, and then suddenly it hits. And you'll see that it's impossible. It switches back and forth between the two, and you can see it's exactly as they're saying. They're not lying. It was a data error in the satellite transmitted data and in the averaging of that. And so, believe it or not, I went ahead and I put into this website here where you get this stuff, I put in the dates, and I went to March the 1st, being today, and it showed the situation where it was dissipating. And I thought, well, I wonder if they forecast tomorrow, so I put in the 2nd of March. Well, or, you know, gosh, up came a map and showing it all leveling out a bit. Well, I said, what about the 3rd and the 4th and the 5th? I got up to the 6th of March before there was no data. And they were averaging 6 days ahead of time, showing all this stuff being absorbed into the background. So then I checked with the source that did the programming on this. And what they do is they average several days, maybe a 10-day window. And when this data gets shoved into their averaging program, they haven't been able to take it out yet. They're doing it now, and correcting the problem on board the satellite that gave the bad data. So then I said, right, okay, let's just double check and be sure maybe we're not like looking at the normal things where you have an earthquake or something like that. So then I put in a couple of methods. 1 and 2, I call them EQ forecast. You can see that on the second row there in the first image. It says EQ forecast. And so I started reaching out all over the place, universities, whatever, finding out people who had sea surface temperature anomalies that I could use to do like I used to predict earthquakes. Now, not as good as what the Navy was giving me. There's some data missing from it that made it a lot better, but I don't have that now. And if you look at this, there is no sign in either of the methods I've used of any major earthquake in the offing in the last 2 or 3 days. There's no signatures that show that we expect a big quake. So people in California, relax. There's just no signs of bad things right now. I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, this method is not as accurate as it used to be, but there's just no small hints and stuff that I would normally see that would tell me something's amiss on our West Coast. So, in fact, I'm going to announce that on Coast to Coast tonight at just after 11 Mountain Standard Time tonight. They asked me to get on there and discuss that. But
you're going to Coast. Okay. Are you going to be on the news segment, or are you going to be on for?
Yeah, it'd be on the news or you know, the 2 minute.
Right.
Quickie that you go on with George, and I mean, there's not a whole program to do about it. It's just a matter of what research I did on what I did find, so people can relax about that.
So who messed up the data then? I mean, or was it? I mean, basically, what you're saying about the carbon monoxide. Now going back to that, it was a mistake, or it was a incorrect reading, or who messed it up?
Yeah, if you go back and you take the plots of data, something that massive, you know, 1,000%, increase in 3 hours and spread all over the state, I mean, people be gasping and grabbing the throats and falling down dead from that much stuff dumping into the atmosphere, you know, that quick. It just did not happen. You know, it was bad data. And it hit not only carbon monoxide, the carbon dioxide figures were off, the sulfur dioxide figures were off. No. You know, it just, all that got hit by that satellite problem.
Gotcha. All right. All right. Well, that's okay. That makes a difference then.
Yeah. Anyway, people can relax for the moment, I think.
All right. All right. That's good. I think. Well, that's one less. We can tick that off. Scratch through that. We've got a whole legal sheet of problems that we're worried about. We can scratch that one off for the moment. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, the GOES-5 satellite, I think, was the one that they were pulling it from, maybe the MODIS, but, you know, look, it's a matter of people looking at that and not checking with the source of the data and the company that's doing it or the government department's doing it and seeing what their official explanation is. But from a technical point, it's just, you know, you can look at it and say, no, wrong, that's just absolutely bad data, so don't worry. That's the main thing. I'm not getting after anybody. I'm just saying, don't worry. Be happy, man. Be happy.
Yeah, remember that song, Don't Worry, Be Happy?
Oh, I do, man. Yeah, the Jamaican guy, he's so cool. Be happy.
It was that 85, maybe, or 86, or something like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, wow. All right.
Hey, you know, this guy, you know, Qasem Soleimani?
Yes.
On my show images page, I've got two recent images. We found one from the 22nd of January, one from the about 26th of February, about 4 or 5 days ago, so they say. But he, in both photographs that I checked, he's holding his hands together. One is sitting down with his hands over his knee, holding his right hand with his left hand with some prayer beads in it. And in the 22nd of January one, which you can see on that show image page, he's got his right hand gripping his left hand, holding it together with a big coat over him. I couldn't see any head wounds that were obvious, but it looks like, you know, he's coming back into the political scene there and directing some operations, so they say, in northern Iraq near Tikrit, where Saddam Hussein was born. The elections last Friday in Iran finished, and the redistribution of the seats was in favor of anti-Israel, you know, sentiments in Iran. And, of course, Soleimani is one of the leaders of that, and the Speaker of the Parliament there was reelected to his position to strengthen all the anti-Israelite people in Iran. So they've got the ticket. Go ahead and exercise against Israel. So things are definitely getting hot over there.
What do you think of? Well, I'm not even sure. I know what question to ask you, but what would be the spark? Would it be Russia, Turkey, Russia? I mean, is that what we're looking at? Something with Russia and Turkey, or would it be something? Yeah, I mean, it could be anything. But your best guess right now, would it be Turkey shooting down another Russian jet, or vice versa, or what would start the ball rolling in your view? Somebody's sneezing wrong, probably.
I mean, boy, there's so many potentials over there. It'll probably be something none of us expected. Looking at the Saudi movements, Prince Salman, of course, has formed this confederation of 350,000 troops that are on the ground somewhere there in the Middle East at the moment, heading for Syria probably. And that is a multinational, you know, multi-Arabic nation group forming this big army. With them on the ground, then the situation between the Shiites and the Sunni Muslims, which they're at odds with each other across the whole Middle East, it might be some religious thing that, you know, the killing of some more clerics on either side that might spark the, you know, the Arab escalation of war between themselves. Or, as you suggested, it might be something in Syria where Russia loses another plane over Turkey and decides to kick the snot out of Erdogan and Turkey. He's already warned them, don't shoot any more of my planes down when we fly over by accident.
Right.
You know, it's going to be something big, and it will be quick, and the resulting actions will escalate in a matter of hours, days, but not weeks, I think. Whenever it starts, it will be quick and decisive, and they will go to nuclear or biowarfare type things. We already know there are bioweapons in the Syria region there. I mean, when Saddam fell, he pushed him out into Syria, and so we know that Bashar Assad has been using him in the north. So I don't know.
We had a whole bunch of questions about China, South China Sea, China's provocations, or at least that's how they're characterized. Do you feel that they, you know, what's your feeling about that in terms of the entirety of the geopolitical situation? Anything to worry about there?
Yeah. I think that China is pushing on Indonesia and wanting Indonesia to be their proxy invaders of Australia. The creation of those artificial islands there in the South China Seas are definitely strategic, and perhaps they will become tactical spots as well, but strategically they are setting up to move in and control the South Pacific and force the United States back home. There may be a recall from the White House, getting our support for the South Pacific back. There may be an attack, but we know from my son being in the Australian Army there that he's out now, but they were being trained for an Indonesian invasion of Australia, and it wasn't an idle threat. What he did find, my son find as unusual, was that they were in one room on the base up there in Queensland being trained on the ways they should defeat an invading Indonesian stroke Chinese invasion of Australia, and in a couple of rooms down were the Indonesian officers that were down there being trained in the same thing that our guys were being trained to fight against them. I mean, so the enemy's two or three doors down being taught how to attack, you know, Australia in essence, but knowing what our defensive measures would be. It's crazy. Just absolutely mad. So China's going down there. China's buying up a lot of Australia. China controls a lot of the politicians. We've got friends and family all over the country down there, and they are worried. They are very worried. As soon as the United States loses its naval presence and defense of the South Pacific and Australia, China's going to move, whether through Indonesia or direct troops. I think they'll make the Indonesians do it because China's got other plans in the Middle East for the oil fields, and they'll need their own army for that.
Just to recap what you just said so I understand it, picture an office building, one office, war games strategy being planned out, and in another office, two doors down, war games being planned out as well, but opposing forces all under the same roof, right?
Yep.
What you're saying.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
So if anyone has any questions, you know, that this is being gamed.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I remember back in 60s, late 60s, Dad and I were, with a lot of other Texans, very upset that we were training Yugoslav pilots who were our enemy at the time. We were training them in an Air Force base in Texas. So we're training the enemy to shoot down our guys there in Texas then. So this is just an extension of that when we go to the Australian-Indonesian situation. Just madness. Gamed, as you say. We're being gamed.
Sure, sure. I mean, all of this is being planned really in the bowels of some Saudi mansion, perhaps, or, you know, in the States somewhere in the in Russia or something. You know, I don't know where, but obviously we are being we're being set up. And I had talked to the gentleman who and produced a film about the Georgia Guidestones. Chris Pinto, he's going to be on our show.
Oh, yeah.
One of my questions I asked him was, you know, based on the Georgia Guidestones, I mean, obviously the big issue there is the depopulation aspect. And,
yep.
You know, and then you compare that to the Deagle report and such. So we know something is coming to really thin the herd. And I don't mean that disparagingly. I mean, you know, to really take out a segment of the population.
No, the Book of Revelation says the same thing. I mean, it's there. It's biblical.
Yeah. Wow.
And look, what we've got so many people, and we're using our resources so badly. We're polluting ourselves to death. Look at all the drugs and stuff that go into the water table, you know, flush down toilets and thrown into garbage heaps and stuff. You know, it's just not wisdom. I mean, we're killing ourselves. We're probably dead in the long term anyway. But
I've got a lot of emails from people too wondering why, and this is a recurrent question. You know, for example, about Fukushima, and we've talked about this. You know, you and I, and on the show. Is it too late to do anything at all? And why isn't anyone trying to do stuff to stop the radiation from Fukushima? Do they know something we don't? Like, it don't matter. It does not matter, I should say. But
I agree.
You know.
It does seem to be a symptom of that. The powers that be, you know, they've pretty much taken care of themselves and the continuance of government and humanity underground somewhere. Who knows?
Yeah.
He may be off the planet. Who knows? But there's going to be a culling of the herd, just like you said. It's coming.
Yeah. And, you know, Stan, forgive my geographical problems here, but you being in Colorado, you've been to the Denver airport quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's always bothered me since it was built or rebuilt back in, 20 some years ago. Why there? And of course, you know, what's going on underneath it? Why the murals? Why the symbology? Yeah, but I guess we know the answers to that. But it's just, everything seems to be right in our faces that, But few people really can see the big picture or see it for what it is. It's always, well, you know, they got to put something up there and don't make too much about it and so on. So, thank goodness for people like yourself who are out there paying attention to very important things. So this is good. So. Anyway, I can't believe we've only got like 12 minutes left of our time together tonight. It's just gone quickly. In the remaining 10, 12 minutes we got. What would you like to?
One thing I want to, just a small quick thing, we can go into whatever people are writing in to ask about. But in Egypt, there's a member of parliament there called, his name is Okasha. And the article I found in the news today said he was a self-described expert on Freemasonry and American Zionist conspiracies in Egypt. And he said that the Israeli ambassador actually asked him to help Israel find the biblical Solomon's Temple. Can you believe that?
Say that again? I mean, did I hear you right? What?
Yeah. He asked him to find the biblical Solomon's Temple. He asked a member of parliament, the Israeli ambassador, asked this guy, Okasha, to help Israel find the Solomon's Temple. Now, whether that means that, Solomon's Temple is, they think it might be in Egypt territory or what, I don't know. But why would you ask the Egyptians? I mean, I know there's some trade and some friendly goings on with gas and stuff between Israel and Egypt, but why would they ask them to help them find Solomon's Temple? As far as I can see, Solomon's Temple is buried under a bunch of rubble on the south side of the Temple Mound, you know, outside the wall there down at the base of it. But it's just a pile of rubble buried with dirt and other stuff over the top of it. But anyway, I just thought it was odd that... the ambassador from Israel, it's Chaim Korens, his name, would ask this guy over dinner Maybe that's so that they could, in Israel, they could build, saying, here's Solomon's Temple, we can rebuild on that spot. And if it's not on the Temple Mount, it's outside on that little mound there on the south side, then that would be a place they could build without raising the ire of the Muslims there. It would be on the wall of the Temple Mount, where underneath is where Solomon's stables were. And I'm sure that they'd get upset, though, for one reason or another, if Israel's digging outside that area down underneath, where the Arabs have already been down underneath that area and complaining they don't want the Israelis involved in it. But, you know, what a nightmare. But anyway, I just thought it was odd that an Egyptian member of parliament would ask, you know, the Israeli ambassador to help him, or the Israeli ambassador would ask him to help him find it.
It is certainly interesting implications from that now and in the future, I guess.
Yeah. I was thinking of something else I was going to share. Oh, remember when we were talking before the show about trees and forests, and you were saying that Vince had said something about the forests were sick?
Yes.
Holly and I walked outside to look at the orchard. We normally don't look at it until the season starts in spring. And we found that we had lost, I think, everyone, maybe except for two trees of our orchard, were split with either a boar worm or some other strange malady. But first time in 10 years we walked out there, and, you know, they had 3-foot-tall splits from the bottom of the trunk right up into the trees. Killed them. I mean, we've lost nearly all, except two, I think, and those may go, of our trees due to some strange malady that split them right up the bark and into the limbs and everything. Just like lightning it struck it, if you can believe it, but it wasn't.
My goodness.
Just a terrible thing to see. All that work we put into it just gone.
Wow.
In one season.
In one season. That quickly.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, sad loss, but...
Wow. Well, I've got a question for you here, Stan. It's off the cuff here. It's unrelated to anything, but I love these questions.
Look forward to those. Yes.
Okay, get ready here,
yep.
Stan. What do you believe? What do you, Stan Dale, believe the Holy Grail is? Since you were talking about the Solomon's Temple and
oh yeah,
and, you know, but what do you think of it?
Look, I think that it was a legend that was misunderstood. I think the Holy Grail really was not a cup or anything like that, but the Grail legend was built around the body of, you know, Jesus being the Grail to hold the blood, and
right.
That he is the Holy Grail, and he's not something you're going to find buried under a mountain, because he's risen and in a parallel universe, and so I don't spend any time looking for either a crude metal cup or a fancy gold goblet, you know, as the Grail cup. I don't think I ever saw any reports of anybody standing around the crucifixion with a cup to catch the blood, you know,
right.
Or running around with the cup that they used at the Last Supper. I mean, just it's entertaining, but I don't think it has much to do with reality. It's a code, like.
Okay. Well, I have a follow-up question to that. So since you believe perhaps it's the actual body of Christ, if I can use that descriptive term, my follow-up question is, could it be something even slightly different than that, and that being the womb of Mary, or in other words, Mary, the mother of Jesus, as opposed to Jesus himself. In other words, the womb.
Well, it could
Mary.
Be. It could be. Yeah. It could
okay.
be.
Right.
But what's the source of the legend? Who brought it back? Was it the Templars? You know, they were they under the direction of the Vatican at the time? Who started this?
I suspect that's a rhetorical question, right? I mean,
yeah.
Who started
yeah.
this? Exactly. It's fun to think about. Yeah,
we get back to the Vatican, and this it all leads back to them being a major player in what's about to happen or what is happening on the planet.
Yes, Yes, and I'm constantly reminded, you know, and whenever we have a discussion like this, I'm constantly reminded to point the finger at the Jesuits and look, I understand, okay, folks, I do understand. So, I mean, yeah, obviously the many roads lead to Rome, I guess. That's what we're saying.
Most definitely, and it is a reviving, if not revived, Roman Empire under the disguise of a religion.
Yes. Very well said.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, just look at it. I mean, it, as I've said before, it's got the old Roman empirical model. It's got a Caesar at the top, and it's got governors of territories underneath you, archbishops and priests, and all through the world and all the major countries.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just needs authority now, and someone's going to probably make that happen. They've got more bite in, and those of us that don't play along are going to be outlaws.
I'm coming to your house.
Well, I tell you what, the good Lord sent us here, by dream vision, and I've often wondered about it, but you mentioned the Denver airport, and I think about that, and I think, well, you know, are the elite going to make their fail-safe, one of them here in Colorado? Is that why we were sent here? Because a lot of the New Age people have been sent here, too, over into the San Luis Valley and on the eastern front of the Rockies as well. So it's like a battleground here in that we have a lot of evangelical outreaches here, you know, focus on the family and various other things here in Colorado Springs and organization in Denver. And, you know, in opposition, you have all these strange beliefs. Those that, you know, at Vaca that are looking for the saucer people to land. And, you know, we went over there a couple months back and took photos of the area. But this seems to be a confrontational area where both, you know, good and evil are going to be in conflict.
Hmm. Interesting.
But as such, it may be a place to be if you want to be in the forefront of the battle.
Well,
just hope it doesn't work out like Uriah the Hittite.
True. Mm-hmm. Well, wow. Regardless, saddle for battle. Again, that's my mantra: saddle for battle, because we're going to need to. And wow. Any closing thoughts as we get about 2 minutes away from the end of the show?
No, let me think here. I think I remembered everything. It gets to the point where you got so much on your plate, it kind of spills out one ear hole if you're not careful. You know, you forget. But I do want to thank all the people that write in to us, either findings or questions, you know, saying, have you looked at this and that kind of stuff. The carbon monoxide thing, I certainly got a lot of those queries from people, and I would have probably even picked it up until, you know, somebody did that. So I want to thank your listeners again, our listeners out there, for participating like that and getting, you know, serious questions to us.
All right.
So keep that up, and I've contacted back some of them by email, you know, that have put in stuff to me, and I've said, look, you brought this to my attention. I want you to watch that just in case I miss it, because there are just so many things going on. You and I both have full plates like that. We depend on the rest of the body, you know, the people out there interacting with us to say what they've found or think they've found so that we can spread that to the rest of everybody on these shows. And it's working. It's really working. I just pray it continues.
This collaborative effort, and Stan, I truly believe that we have the most intelligent audience in the world and the most astute when it comes to things like this. And sometimes they're not always right, but they're always passionate and certainly always attentive and responsive. And for that, we thank them. Stan, thank you.
Okay, we've gone through another hour, and I think the fire needs a bit of a boost here, so we need to put a log on the fire and have our cup of coffee and see the silly world of politics on the tube.
That's true. On this Super Tuesday, have a great night, my friend. God bless. Say hello to Holly and the little ones. Good night, everyone.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.